In my mind, the most important skill a defense attorney can develop is the skill of cross-examination. Lawyers love to debate this. What's most important during the trials or what they do during opening, during cross, direct over their own witnesses, or closing. In my mind, cross is what's most important. Cases are won and lost during cross. Now, there are a couple myths out there about what makes someone great at cross-examination. One myth is that people are great at cross-examination because they were born great. They have this innate quality to do it, and that's what separates the truly great cross-examiners from everyone else. The second myth about cross-examination is that people who are great at cross are great because they're doing everything on the fly. They can think quickly on their feet, and they can respond to anything that comes up. Now, what you'll notice about both of these myths is they support the notion that cross-examination is something that doesn't require a lot of work. People, I think, love to justify not doing a lot of work. But what I have found is that people are not born great as cross-examiners. And it's not so much that what the great ones are great because they can just do everything quickly or on the fly. But what I have found is that what makes someone great at cross-examination is the work and preparation that goes into a cross-examination. No matter how easy and effortless it might look in court, usually that's a function of the work and the preparation that was done in advance of the trial and before the cross-examination began. So if there's one thing I want to impart to all of you, it's that to be great at the cross-examination, you have to spend a lot of time working on it. Preparation is key. And working on it by writing it out, by going over it, and mooting it even before you go into that courtroom to do it. Now, at this point, I want to talk a little bit about what exactly is the purpose of a cross-examination during the trial. It is not the opportunity to see what you can find out. What you're doing during the trial at the time of cross-examination is not simply going on that fishing expedition, saying, oh, I wonder if I can find out about this or find out about that. I never knew about this particular fact. Does the witness think the perpetrator was 6 feet tall or 5 foot four? Why don't I ask him? Or, you know, which hand does the officer say the gun was tossed from, the left hand or the right hand? Maybe I'll ask him. I'm sort of curious about that. Now, during trial, cross-examination is not the opportunity to try and see what you can find out. Cross-examination is the time when you make points, when you establish facts, elicit answers from which that will advance your theory of the case, either because they affirmatively support what you're saying during the trial, or because they undermine what the government is saying. And that is the goal of your cross-examination. It's not to learn about things you didn't know about before the trial started, but it's to make the points you need to make to win the trial. Now, in any case, one thing you'll always have to think about is, well, should you cross-examine this particular witness? There's no burden on you to cross-examine every witness. And sometimes the best decision a lawyer can make is simply to ask no questions or very few questions of a witness, especially if you're trying to show that this witness isn't important, or if what they're saying doesn't affect your theory of the case at all, there's really no reason to cross-examine them at all. So before you ever cross-examine a witness, you should always ask yourself, should I do that? Does this witness advance? Do I need to get facts from this witness to advance my theory of the case? Or do I need to cross-examine this witness because I need to undermine what they're saying? In other words, does this witness hurt me, hurt my case, or can this witness help me? You need to ask yourself those questions before you even start thinking about what the cross-examination will look like. And you should only do a cross-examination if you decided that it's worth it to you, either because it's worth it for you to get the facts that support your theory, or to undermine in some way what that witness is saying because the witness hurts you. No matter what, a cross-examination is always going to be full of risks. No matter how bad it may seem at the end of that direct, it can get worse during cross-examination if you don't think ahead of time about what you're going to ask and why you're asking it. Now, very often, of course, it is necessary for you to cross-examine a witness. So again, keep in mind what the purpose is for why you're doing that. And so what I encourage you to do is, before you even get into that courtroom, once you've identified this witness as someone that you do need to cross-examine, ask yourself, what am I trying to get from this witness? Or to put it another way, what are the points I want to make? It's usually just going to be a few points, maybe two, maybe three, maybe six or seven. It might be points that show that the witness is lying. So what would those points be like? Well, maybe the witness has a bias, a personal bias. The witness doesn't like you or doesn't like a member of your family. It could be a bias in which the witness has an interest in the outcome of this case. Perhaps the witness has a deal with the government to testify against your client in order to get immunity or to get some kind of plea. Or maybe the point you want to make is that the witness is changing his or her story, that the witness has given inconsistent statements. Perhaps you want to show that the story or a story the witness is saying doesn't make any sense. Perhaps you want to bring out prior bad acts by the witness or prior convictions. You know, in D.C., you can impeach a witness, any witness, with prior convictions, prior criminal convictions. Anything that's a felony or any misdemeanor prior conviction that is one of truthfulness, which for the most part means any misdemeanor except for simple assault and destruction of property. Or maybe your goal with this witness is not to make points that show the witness is not truthful, that they are lying, but maybe you want to show that they're mistaken in some way. Maybe you want to show that they had a poor opportunity to observe the incident, that there's something about their perception. Or maybe you want to make points about their memory. Or perhaps, instead of doing any of these things, you want to use this witness to help you. You're not so much attacking the witness as eliciting facts from them that support your theory of the case. Any one of these might be different kinds of points you want to make from the witness. In cross-examination, you need not and should not go through everything that the government has gone through during the direct. Rather, you want to figure out what those points are that you want to make. Those points we often think of as chapters. A cross is sort of like a book, and you have a number of chapters in those books. And each point is a chapter. And each chapter is going to have a question or a series of questions that support that chapter. So maybe in a case where your client is charged with a robbery and your defense is mistaken identification, that it was somebody else who did that, you want to have a chapter about how the witness, the complainant, did not have a good opportunity to observe. So that chapter heading might be, you know, poor opportunity to observe. And you'll have a number of questions which support that point. And those questions might be about the lighting. It might be about that the person was drinking, that they didn't have their glasses on, or that they didn't see the approach of the individual. Whatever those points you're going to want to, those questions you're going to ask, all of them will support that point of a poor opportunity to observe by that witness. So now, we've talked about the goals of the cross-examination, that you want to make points from the witness, and you want to be thoughtful about the points you make, and about the decision to cross-examine a witness. So now I want to talk a little bit about the execution of the cross-examination. How do you ask questions of a witness during cross-examination? And the first rule of cross-examination is that you can, and more importantly, that you should ask leading questions. So what is a leading question? A leading question is a question that suggests the answer. Let me give you a few examples. This incident happened at 11 p.m. There were no streetlights in the alley. The perpetrator approached you from behind. Each of those aren't even really questions, right? What they really are statements. And that's what you're doing in cross-examinations. You're not so much asking questions as making statements, suggesting what the answer is, and then, of course, eliciting from the witness what should hopefully be, and we'll talk about how to make sure it is, a yes answer to that question. So that's really rule number one of cross-examination, is only ask leading questions. Now for this rule, and other rules I'll talk about, there are of course exceptions to that. If you were to come watch me do a cross-examination, you'll notice that I ask a number of open-ended questions. And I do that for a specific reason, and that's sort of some advanced cross-examination techniques. But at least for your first, I would say, 3 or 4 years of trying cases, you should make sure your questions are almost exclusively leading questions. Not only should you ask leading questions, but you should ask one fact per per question. So you'll notice in the example I gave a moment, there's really just one fact embedded in each question. And again, I'm using the word question in sort of quotes because it's really a statement. The incident happened at 11 p.m. One question. There are no streetlights in the alley. It's really just one fact in that question. The perpetrator approached you from behind. Really, those were two questions sort of built upon each other to make sure that each question has just one fact in it. And here's why you want to do that. Suppose you say, you know, the incident happened at 11 p.m. and there were no lights in the alley, and the person approached you from behind. Right, sir? Well, if you get a yes, or if you get a no, or an I don't know, we don't know which fact the witness is responding to. And in fact, for that reason, that's actually an objectionable question, because really it's a compound question. Questions are really sort of required to be eliciting just one fact. So make sure you keep it to just the one fact. But not only should you ask leading questions and one fact per question, but make sure you're asking about objective facts. It's sort of rule number three. Ask objective fact questions. A question to which there is objectively a yes or a no answer. So for example, you want to ask a question like, this incident happened at 11 p.m. where there are no streetlights in the alley. There is a truth or a falsity to those questions. You could objectively prove whether it's true or not. If you ask it more subjectively, you're going to find yourself with some problems. If you say, no, it was dark out, well, you might get, well, no, there was some light from the moon. You might start getting answers that you didn't anticipate that aren't going to help you. Or if you ask questions like, you didn't really get a good look at the person's face, did you? They'll start arguing with you and explaining why that's not true. So if you ask objective facts, you will have your ammunition you need to draw the inferences by the fact finder that you want to be drawn and to make the arguments in closing argument that you need to make to win. Remember, your goal in cross-examination is ultimately to persuade your fact finder. You don't have to worry about trying to persuade your witness. You don't really care if your witness agrees with the points you're trying to make. So don't worry about whether they agree with you or not. Just make the points you want to make using these techniques of leading questions, one fact per question, and objective fact questions. Another rule, never ask a question to which you can't prove up the answer or at least make the witness look silly if they deny it. This rule is often called never ask a question to which you don't know the answer. I don't like to think of it that way because sometimes you can know the answer. I can say to somebody, you know, sir, you live on 2305 13th Street Southeast, don't you? And I know that because lots of people have told me that. Maybe I even saw the person, you know, coming out of their house one day. But if they say no, then there's no evidence of it. They may not agree with it, even though I know in my heart of hearts it's true. Because remember, as a lawyer, what you believe and what you know doesn't really matter. So you want to ask a question to which you can prove up. So I say to someone, you live at 2305 13th Street Southeast, you know that if they say no to that question, well, you have a document, let's say, that's going to show, that you can impeach them with, that shows that this is their address. Maybe they put it on a police report they signed or a statement they signed, or it's in some other public document. Another example might be saying to someone, let's say, you know, the perpetrator was 6 feet tall, right? Well, you only want to ask that question, that statement, because you know that if the witness says no, you have it written somewhere, you know from some other source that it's true. Either because that's what they told the police officer or told your investigator. You have some way of proving up the question to which you're asking. Now, sometimes you'll be in a position where you won't have any way of proving up things. So you should only ask those questions to which the witness will look kind of silly if they deny it. That's the sort of second part to that rule. So let's say you have a cooperating witness, a snitch who's on the stand, and you want to show that that witness is biased against your client, that they're saying what they're saying because of the deal they're making with the government. You might ask them a question or make a statement like, you don't want to go to jail. Now, you don't have written anywhere, you don't have any way of showing that they've said that before, but you know they'll look silly if they say no to that question because it's human nature. It's common sense. Of course, they don't want to go to jail. And that's a kind of question you can ask, even though you can't prove it up, because you know that at the end of the day, they'll either say yes, which is what you want, and if they say no, nobody is going to believe them when they say that. And you can argue that during your closing argument. So that's sort of our fourth rule about never asking a question to which you can either prove up or at least make the witness look silly if they deny the question. Get your answer. If the question is worth asking, then make sure you get an answer. And you'll find that some witnesses, even police officers, they'll try and evade answering the question. Sir, you were 100 feet away at the time that you say you saw this incident. It was a distance of 100 feet, right? Well, I was in the car when it happened. That's not what I'm asking you, officer. My question is, you were 100 feet away. Well, there was some distance. My question is, you were 100 feet away, right? If they're not giving you the answer, repeat it. And again, you should be asking that question because you have some way of proving it up, or you have some reason, some basis for asking the question. Posner and Dodd often talk about, you know, using reverse, repeat, repeat, reverse. So if you ask a question, the witness doesn't answer it, you can repeat that question. Repeat it a couple times. And then if you have to, you can reverse it. So you can say something like, the person was 100 feet away. They don't answer. Say it again. The person was 100 feet away. You're saying the person was not 100 feet away? That's sort of reversing it. So make sure you get that answer from them. Posner and Dodd are just two individuals who have written about cross-examination. That's why I'm talking about them. So that's another rule here for cross-examination. Perhaps the most important rule, or I should say the most difficult rule for cross-examination for lawyers, is listen to the answer that you get. As lawyers, we spend so much time thinking about what we're going to say. We spend so much time talking that it's often at the expense of listening. So whenever you ask a question, if it was worth asking, listen to the answer, the whole answer, before you think about what that next question is going to be. So if you ask a question like, you know, officer, you know, it was 100 feet away, and the answer you get is, I think so, but I'm not sure because I was, you know, I wasn't wearing my glasses at the time. If you're going on to that next question of, you know, and this was at 10 p.m., you might have missed that great fact that he just gave, that he wasn't wearing glasses. So you want to be aware of those answers. Sometimes it's going to be a really good fact that you're going to want to then use and to loop into your next question and to spend time talking about that good fact. Or if it's a bad fact, you might have to take it on. You might have to do some cross-examination on that bad fact that just came out. So remember to listen to the questions, to listen to the answers when you ask the questions. Don't ask the ultimate question. You know, we talk about the points, the chapters you're going to want to have for your cross-examination. And each chapter is going to have a question or a series of questions to make that point. So let's say, for example, that the point we're trying to make, the chapter is the example I gave before, the poor opportunity to observe. And you ask questions like, you know, ma'am, this incident happened at 11 p.m., correct? And it happened in an alley, and there are no streetlights in the alley. And you were coming from the bar, and you had been drinking alcohol that evening. You're asking a bunch of questions, one fact per questions, all to show that this person didn't get a good look at the perpetrator's face. And those are great questions to ask if you have the basis for them, if you have a way to prove it up. But remember, don't ask that last question. That last question would be something like, so you didn't get a good look at the person's face, did you? Don't ask that question. If you ask that question, well, you're going to undo everything you just did. And the witness will start explaining why the witness did get a good look. So just ask the objective fact questions, and the jury or fact finder will be able to infer from those questions the point you're trying to make. Usually it's a good sign that you're about to ask a question you shouldn't if it starts with so. If you're saying so and then something follows, it usually means it's a question you probably don't want to ask. It's that one question too many. So be aware of that and try and avoid doing it if you can. And finally, and this sort of goes without saying, and I've sort of referenced it in every session I've talked about so far, Every question you ask has to have a purpose. And that purpose must be in conjunction or consistent with your theory of the case. If you don't know why you're asking a question, or it's not clear that that question supports your theory of the case, either by affirmatively supporting it or undermining what the government is saying, don't ask that question. Really, when it comes to cross-examination, less is more. You don't want to be up there for a long period of time. You want to get in, get everything out that you need to from the witness, and sit down. So I've talked about the goals of cross-examination, and I've talked now about the execution of the cross-examination, how you do it. Now I'm going to talk briefly about the organization and structure of cross-examination. Because just like an opening statement or thinking about our theory of the case, it does not have to be and often should not be chronological. There's no reason for you to go in the exact same order that the prosecutor went. Most likely the prosecutor went in a chronological order, you know, from the beginning of the event to the middle of the event to the end of the event. But again, just like our opening statement is sort of trying to give an alternative lens for your fact finder to view the evidence, it's the same thing with the cross-examination. So don't think about doing it in a chronological order. So here's some things to think about. Think about primacy and recency. You want to start strong and you want to end strong. It could be that your best point is something that happened right at the beginning of this event. It's perfectly fine to make that point at the very end of your cross-examination. You want to start strong and you want to end strong. Certainly, as you think about the chapters, you want them to flow from one to the other. So after you put your chapters together, think, does it make sense to go in this particular order, or is there another order that I want to go on? There is no real rule about the order of a cross-examination, other than you generally want to start strong and you want to end strong. My only advice is to think critically about how you do that, and don't fall into sort of the prosecutor's trap of just making it chronological. And finally, I just want to talk a little bit about the preparation for the cross-examination. That's key. That's really where the great crosses are made, by the preparation that goes into it. And it starts by thinking about all the facts in your case, being cognizant of what your theory of the case is, being aware of everything that the witness has said before in this case, and what they might say on the witness stand, and trying to anticipate those answers. So even a 10, 15-minute cross-examination could take days, in some cases, of preparation to go through it. Now, I don't want to scare you. I don't want you to think that it's so overwhelming you can't do it. But I do want to just instill in you this notion that if you want to do a great cross-examination, spend a lot of time at your desk thinking about it and writing it out. And you should write out every question that you're going to ask. Now, it might be that there are times when you have to go off script a little bit. That's okay. And you don't want to be too wedded to the script that you don't listen to answers and respond to them. But even after 9 years of practicing long, I still write out every single question. I do drafts and drafts and drafts until I get it right. And not only should you spend time working on your cross in front of your computer, handwriting it out, but you want to actually practice it. Try and get a friend or a colleague, someone you know who's familiar with the facts of your case, to role play the witness. And that'll make sure that when you do it right that one time in court, it's as good a cross-examination as it possibly can be.